37, Lamed Zayin. We'll just skip the Sukkim 23 onwards. They took his shirt off. They dipped it in blood in order to make believe that he was killed by an animal.
Is there a reason why they repeat the name of his garment?
Well, according to Rashi, we're talking about two different garments, really. I mean, I don't want to go into the details. It, kutanto is the chaluk, it's like a tunic, and this is the shirt. I mean, it's a question exactly what the first one is, kutanto. But Rashi understands it as two different garments. Yeah.
Could it correspond to what we today would have, let's say, it's another garment that sits underneath?
Could be. It's a possibility. We don't know really what. Then they decide to sell him. And here it's not clear who they sold him to. If you take a look here. In verse number 25, what would it seem? That they sat down to eat bread, and they raised their eyes, and they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites. Right? So they saw the Ishmaelites, and then they decide, let's sell him. In verse number 27, Chavzayin, Lechu venimkerenu laIshmaelim, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites. V'yadeinu al tivo, so we won't kill him. We'll just sell him. And then in verse... Well, yeah, there is. Again, I didn't want to go into the details. In the Midrash, it mentions that the Torah is just stressing that the lightheartedness of the whole of the decision, in which we are blaming the decision makers. That they didn't take seriously enough the decision. They sat down to eat bread. But in verse number 28, it says that they ended up selling Vayavru Anashim Midianim, Midianites. It sounds like they are different people here, Midianites, in verse number 28. So Rashi says, Zui Shayara Heret. This we are talking about another caravan. So according to Rashi, what it really means is that he kept being sold from one to the other. Yosef was a good product, and you know, everybody made a profit out of him. The brother sold him to one, that one sold him to someone else, and so on and so forth. So therefore it says here that the ones that actually pulled him out from the pit were the Midianim. Vayalu et Yosef min habor, they raised him, vayimkeru et Yosef laIshmaelim. Which means the Midianites ended up selling him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver.
So that means the brothers didn't sell at all?
Well, the simple interpretation is that they did sell him, but they paid that the Midianites made a deal with the Ishmaelites that the Midianites will pull him out of the pit and give it to the Ishmaelites. But they made a profit. They made a profit of the 20 pieces of silver. What the other one made, the Torah doesn't go into it. Now, who was involved? Everybody, of course, except Binyamin and Reuven. In verse number 29, Vayashov Reuven elabor. And when Reuven comes back to the pit, obviously he wasn't there at the time of this. At the time of the selling, v'inei eni Yosef babor. Yosef is not in the pit. Vayikra et begadav. So he tears his clothing. Question is, why did he tear his clothing? Tearing the clothing is a sign of what?
Mourning.
So why should he assume that he was killed? Why should it have occurred to him that he was actually killed? Because after all, they did give up the idea of killing him. By throwing him into the pit, they did give up the idea of killing him. Why should it have occurred to him that they took him out of the pit in order to kill him again?
Well,
it's hard to believe.
What? Could have been killed in the pit, and then they took the body.
So
out.
You're going to say, well, perhaps he thought, meanwhile he got killed, and they took him out to bury him. So why did they leave him there? Why should they just leave him there?
There were scorpions and all kinds of snakes and whatnot in the pit.
And why leave his body in there with you know, with that?
So you mean he probably thought that the brothers took him out because he was killed.
That would seem to make sense.
Yeah.
Shechem was surrounded by Jewish enemies, and it's possible that any one of them might have taken him captive and then killed him.
Okay, fine. I mean, it's a possibility that Reuven thought that he was killed.
But the other problem is near Shechem.
The other problem is that when Reuven gives them the advice to throw him into the pit, it says in the Midrash. It's a direct quote from the Zohar. Batuach haya Reuven. Reuven was 100% sure that he will not get killed in the pit. That's what it says. He was 100% sure. He didn't have the most minimal doubt. Otherwise, he would have never have suggested that Yosef should be thrown into the pit. So, according to this, it's hard to really believe that all of a sudden the first thing that occurs to him is that he was killed. Right? Why didn't it occur to him what actually happened? That he was sold. That's a possibility.
Maybe the rendering of the cutting of the cloth, tearing the cloth, is not a sign.
Oh, so it says that there is somebody else who is supposed to rent his clothing and sit and mourn as if his close relative died, even though he didn't die. Somebody who has abandoned his roots.
Intermarriage.
Yeah. If he has a child that intermarried, it says that as a sign that he has given up on him, right? It's as if there is such a thing as a spiritual death and a physical death. So there is Korea renting the clothing for a physical death, but there is such a thing as a spiritual death, right? Now, it says like this. Do you know what the brothers did? It's an oral tradition. Well, it's more than an oral tradition. It's actually mentioned in the Haftorah. What the brothers did with the money that they got. That's what it says in the Midrash. What do they do with the money that they got? They bought shoes. Take a look. It's in the Haftorah. If you take a look at the Haftorah of Vayeshev, it's a portion in the book of Amos. In the book of Amos, in the first verse, the second part of the first verse of the Haftorah of this week, Vayeshev. Komar Hashem al shlosha pishei Yisrael al Hashemeno al michram bakesef tzadik. They sold the tzadik. Who is the tzadik? Yosef, Bakesef, Ve'evion, and he was up. He had nothing. What did they want from him? Bavur na'alayim. They sold him for a pair of shoes. Okay? So the commentaries ask, what is the symbolism of the pair of shoes for which they sold Yosef? They sold him for a pair of shoes. As if, like that is, that somehow symbolizes how terrible it was that they bought a pair of shoes. And if they would have bought a suit or a, you know, food. What's the difference? What is the idea? What is the symbolism of the pair of shoes? So, it says the following. You know that there is a special symbolism in a pair of shoes. We're going to see really the next portion has to do with a pair of shoes. It says that when a person dies without children, he has no continuity, dies without children. So, in order to guarantee his spiritual continuity, his brother must marry his wife. That's what it says. If the man is married and he dies without children, then his brother must marry his wife. It's called the levirate marriage, ibum. And in this way, the Torah says you guarantee the spiritual survival of his soul. Whatever that means. We won't go into the details what it means. Perhaps later on we will talk about a little bit more in the next parsha. What?
They don't want it spiritual.
No. And if they don't want, the wife takes off the shoe of the husband, and she spits in front of him as a sign of disgust. But so the spitting, we can understand, it's a sign of disgust. Look what a terrible thing you did. But why the taking off of the shoe? What is the symbolism of the taking off of the shoe? So it says in the one of the classical commentaries, the Malbim, the Maharal, it talks about the meaning of the shoe. What is the symbolism of the shoe? Says like this. When a person, right, a person wants to step on the ground, it's very difficult because the ground is cold, dirty, right? Cuts. So what do you do? in order for the delicate body that it should have a contact with the earth, with the ground. Put on shoes, wear shoes. So shoes is the intermediary which allows the delicate body to have contact with the ground, with the earth. Okay? Now, the soul is a spiritual essence. It's a spiritual essence. But the soul has contact with the, what? S-O-U-L. Right? Right, nothing, right? It has a spiritual essence. But it's a spiritual essence which craves to have a contact with the physical world. Right? Like, it's painful for a neshama to be separated from the body. Right? It's difficult because the neshama, the soul, craves to have a contact with the body. So what happens when a person dies, it says? When a person dies, somehow, if he has a continuity, if he has children, the soul still has a contact through the children. It's as if the children serve as a reincarnation of his own soul. We mentioned before that this is symbolized by the name. The name of the dead person is maintained through the children. If you remember, we spoke about that in Hebrew, the word name is spelled Shin Mem, and the word Neshama is spelled Nun, Shin, Mem, Hey. And if you remove the outer letters of the word Neshama, Nun and Hey, you are remain with the word Shem. So the word Shem, which really means the name, represents the essence of the soul. And somehow when we say that the name is maintained, we really mean that the essence of the soul is maintained through future generations. What happens if a person dies without children? Then the Shem, that part of the soul, has nowhere to grab a hold of, because he has no continuity. Comes the Torah and tells you, well, we have a remedy. If the brother will marry his wife, then the descendants from that union will carry on the name, which really means will carry on the soul. Okay? Now, if so, using the analogy of the shoe, what might we say? That this, for the soul to come down to this earth, it requires a body. If it doesn't have a body to attach itself to, it can't connect, because the soul is too delicate, it's too spiritual to have a contact with the dirty world that we are in. So it requires a body. So in a way, the body is the shoe of the soul. This is why it says by Moshe Rabbeinu, when he has the first prophetic experience, he's told, take off your shoes. Why? Because the place is holy. The metaphor behind it is, you must shed your physicality. This is a purely spiritual experience. You can't keep your shoes on when you are having a prophetic experience. That is the symbolism of it. According to this then, it means that the idea of the shoe is related to the relationship between the soul and the world, and it has to do with the continuity. As long as a person has a continuity, he has his shoes on. And otherwise, it's as if you took off the shoes. Okay, it's as if you took off the shoes of the person. Now, what's the idea? They decided that Yosef must be cut out of the Jewish people, right? It's like an operation. You have to cut him out of the Jewish people. How? The only way is through death. You must kill him. So when Yehuda comes up with the idea, you know what? We can do it in another way. How? By selling him. How does that fit in? How will selling him solve the problem? Exactly. The moment he's going to be sold and he's going to become part of another people, he's going to assimilate, he's going to drop his Judaism, and at that point you have cut off his continuity anyway. So we can, what Yehuda's idea was, that we can fulfill the same purpose without actually killing him. Why do we have to kill him to cut him out of the Jewish people? Let's do something that will cause his assimilation, and that will be the other, another way, another alternative. Okay. In other words, the moment he becomes assimilated to the Egyptians, they knew that they were coming to Egypt and that they are going to sell him to the Egyptians. Egypt is too powerful a culture to be able to survive in it. You can't survive in it. Definitely Yosef won't survive in it. They don't see Yosef as a tzaddik. Remember, they don't see Yosef as a great righteous man. They see Yosef as a man who just tries to please. Sometimes there are... when he was with his father, he tried to please his father. Such a person, the moment he's going to be in an environment when the pressures are going to be to give up his religion, so of course he's going to give up his religion. The moment he's going to give up his religion, so what happens with this continuity? Lost forever. In other words, they took off his shoes. Okay, so the symbolism. that they bought a pair of shoes, that means like they kept the shoes with them. It's as if like we are going to guarantee the shoes. We have the shoes. He doesn't have the shoes, so to speak. This is the symbolism of it. And this is the reason why Reuven rents his clothing, as we said before. When a person intermarries, Chas v'Shalom, it says that the family sits shiva. The family sort of gives up. Why? But he's still alive. Because the moment he intermarries, like he's giving up on the continuity of the Jewish people. Okay? So this is the reason why Reuven rents his clothing when he realizes that he was sold. So it's not that he thinks that he's dead. As the Zohar says, he was sure Yosef is not dead. But one thing he thought, that if he sold to the Egyptians, he's lost forever. Yeah, somebody? Yeah.
Last time, somebody explained this.
There is a symbolism of the shoes as being physical needs. And this is what Yosef is supposed to do. As a matter of fact, it does say that Yosef was supposed to take care of the Esav. I remember the partnership between Esav and Yaakov. Yosef is supposed to be the physical one, the provider. And that's what he became later on. He was the provider. So the idea is that the shoes represents like a basic need of the of a human being. As a matter of fact, it's...
We don't say that...
Exactly. There are some, not everybody agrees with that, but there are some who take off the daily blessing. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, we say, She'oso li, she'asa li kol tzorki, it says. Thank you, God, that you did everything which I need. So some of the commentators, some of the authorities say, on Tisha B'Av, don't say it. Why? Because you can't wear shoes. And if you can't wear shoes, then you don't have all your needs. They don't say you don't eat. No. We're not eating fine, so you don't eat. You don't have shoes. Because it's, the idea is the symbolism of the shoes. The symbolism, also the same thing. They say, according to these authorities, you don't say she'osa li kol tzorki on Yom Kippur either. Why? Because the shoes represent your contact with the physical world. Meaning, your shoes represent everything. Everything which you need for the for physical life. So therefore, one of the other symbolisms is that they take the shoes, in other words, they buy with the money they got from Yosef the shoes as if to say, we will do the providing of the tzrochim, of the needs. Yosef, we don't need Yosef, we can survive without Yosef. Correct, I want to say it's a little bit. What?
The same thing like Yaakov.
Exactly. It's like Yaakov when he got the broches, that by getting the broches from Esav, what he really was saying is, I can do both jobs. Right? So that's what they were saying too. Yeah. How did you hear that? That's what I said last year. Did I said it last year, you know. It could be that I mentioned it also, yeah. Okay, let's go on. We don't have much time, they come to the father. The father mourns for him, but he can't find consolation. And according to our tradition, the reason why he can't find consolation is because intuitively he sensed only for a dead person can someone find consolation. For someone who is alive, so that broche, that blessing that God gave to the world of shikho, forgetting, you know, it says that one of the blessings that God gave to the world is that no matter how close you feel to a member of the family, if you lose him, God gives a blessing of forgetfulness, right? That's what it says. God, it's like a blessing of forgetfulness. But that blessing only applies when the person is really dead. But when the person is really alive, but he thinks he's dead, then the blessing doesn't go on him. Therefore, since he didn't have that blessing, he couldn't forget him. He couldn't forget him. And therefore, for the rest of his life, from this point until he finds out that Yosef is alive, he can't find consolation on anything else. And then in Posuk Lamed Vav it says, V'hamedonim. Now, this medonim, they sound like what? Like the same medionim, they took him out of the pit. But it's very difficult, because what does it say? What did the Midianim do? They sold him to the Ishmaelim. So obviously here, the Midianim, it's a different people. So therefore he was sold already again. Midianim sell him to the Ishmaelim. Ishmaelim to the Midianim. And the Midianim sell him to the Egyptians. What? Well, remember that the life of Yosef, right, represents Golus. And the different Goluyos, the different exiles of the Jewish people, are concentrated in the lifetime of Yosef. So the different sellings of Yosef represent different Goluyos, different exiles. Now, pay attention to what's going on here. Do you see Posuk Lamed Vov, 36? So where do we stop the story? At which point do we stop the story? The Medonim sell him to Mitzrayim, le Potiphar, Seris Paro, to Potiphar, the eunuch of Paro, which really means the assistant of Paro. They were called eunuchs because usually assistants were eunuchs. It just means an assistant to Paro, a minister, Sarah Tabochim. And there the story is cut off. And the story goes back to the same point in chapter 39. Take a look, chapter 39, the first verse. The Yosef hurad Mitzrayim, vaikneyu Potiphar Sris Paroi Sarat Abochim, Ish Mitzri, etc., etc., etc. It's very, very strange. The Torah usually doesn't do it. I mean, in a modern novel, Lehavdil, it happens very often. You read a portion and then it stops at a certain point, goes over to another subject, and then comes back to the same point. But in the Torah, usually you carry through a story until the end, and then you go on to another story. Here, we find this the next story right in the middle of the selling of Yosef, which is very, very strange. We must find a reason for it. Let's go through the story in chapter 38. Vaiba etahi, in those days, which means it's related to what we just said before, otherwise the Torah wouldn't point out. At that time, when Yosef was sold, Vayered Yehuda meyetechav. Vayered literally means what? He went down. He went down. So literally means he went down from what? From a high place. But it's strange. Why should we say he was in a high place? Vayelech Yehuda meyetechav. Because Vayered is another meaning too. Remember what we said concerning the job, the task of Yehuda among the brothers. He was the king. He was chosen as the king. They intuitively sensed that he's going to get the blessings of kingdom, of monarchy. They saw his nature. And they gave him the title of Melech Israel. So when it says Vayered, it means literally he lost his job. Vayered means he lost his job. They fired him. No more king. Why? Because it says at this point already they started regretting what they did. And they came to Yehuda and they said, you know, you told us to sell him and we did it. If you would have told us to return him to his father, we would have done it too. So therefore, it's your fault. You're fired. That's what it says. Right? So, what? He regained, of course. But at this point, he's fired. He's out of a job. So it goes away from the brothers, no contact. And he goes to a friend of his and he meets a woman. Vayarsham Yehuda bat Ishknani, etc., etc., and they have children. Now, they have one son, his name is Er, in Posuk Gimel. A second son, and his name is Onan. And they have a third child called Shelah, okay? So they have three children. And then many years pass, and Er becomes an adult, and you have to find him a wife. And Yehuda finds him a wife. And in Prosuk 6, he finds him a wife, and her name is Tamar. Somehow, for some reason that the Torah doesn't describe exactly, Er did something wrong, and God punished him, and he's dead. So what happens? No children. So the other brother is supposed to marry him, even though this is before the Torah. This is before the Torah. Obviously, it was a custom even before the Torah was given, meaning it was known that the only way that the soul of Er will remain alive, so to speak, in this world, is through the marriage of his wife to his brother. So Yehuda asked Onan to marry the woman. And even the word, take a look in verse number 8. Vayomer Yehuda Leonam bo elei shetochicho. Ve'yabeim ota. Even the verb, you know what, in yibum, right? Ve'hokeim zera, and guarantee a continuity, establish a continuity, le'achicho. Right? That's the whole idea, that your brother should have a continuity. So Onan decided that he doesn't want to do it for his brother, because he knows that Tamar will have in mind only to guarantee the survival of the brother's soul. So he says, why should I bother having children supporting him for my brother? Selfish man, this Onan. So therefore, right, but the idea is that he was afraid that that everything was dependent on the intentions of the woman at the time. That's what he thought. There is a basis for it. It's not that he only thought that way. There is something true about it. That it all depends on the intention of the mother at the time that she has relations with the brother. If she has in mind to bring back the soul of the dead husband, then it works. So he is afraid that Tomor only wants the reestablishment of the soul of Er. And she doesn't really care about him. That's what he thinks. So this is why he says, it won't be my child. I know. She is raising a child for Er, for the brother, not mine. So why should I bother? So he didn't have normal sexual relations with her. He refused in order that she shouldn't get pregnant. Whenever we find such an immediate reaction of God, that means that he was a tzaddik. Or Er and Onan. You never find an immediate direct reaction from God to the sin of a certain person unless the person is a tzaddik. Why? Because we know that God reacts either through din, through strict justice, or through rachamim. The higher the level of the righteousness of the person, the more God can afford din, strict justice. Right? So it's an unusual thing. Why should God react so immediately and violently against such a sin? Fine, I give him a chance, you know, perhaps, you know, give him some time. The point is, when a person is perfect, except that in one thing is not good, right? God in a way like wants to rectify the flaw so he should remain perfect, so to speak. So we are talking about tzaddikim. We are not talking about rishonim. We are not talking about evil people. We are talking about tzaddikim who committed maaseh rishus, an evil act. But in general, we are not talking about rishonim. So this is why God punishes them immediately. And at that point, it says in verse number 11, Vayomer Yehuda letamar kalato, what should you do now? According to our custom, now it's a law, but in those days it was like a custom, that they wouldn't be allowed to marry outside the family. If there is a brother, for instance, let's say he's too young, he's only 13, 14 years old. We have to wait until he becomes older. So in the meantime, what can she do? Wait, that's all. She can't get married to someone else in the meantime. So that's what Yehuda says. Shevi al mana beit aviv. Go back to your parents' home and just stay as a widow. In other words, don't remarry yet. Don't remarry. Ad yigdal sheila b'ni, until sheila, which is the third son. Remember, there is a third son, until he grows up. But why did he say that? Why did he say that? Says the Torah. Ki Amar, in his heart, he said to himself the following. I don't really want Sheila to marry her. Why? Pen Yamud Gamu Kechav. Perhaps there is something about this woman. She's a cursed woman. And this is why she killed both husbands. That's what it says. That's what Rashi said. What? What?
Correct.
I mean, probably the custom existed of chalitza. We don't know. We know chalitza is exist in the Torah. Before the Torah, we don't know. At the time, either he refused because he didn't do chalitza because he wanted to give in to his father's advice, right? But whatever it is, at this point, he tries to convince Tamar to wait. Just wait. And he hopes that somehow something is going to happen. And fine, you know, she's going to forget about it, whatever it is. Vayirbu hayamim. And time passed on. Vatamoch vatshu aishat Yehuda. Yehuda lost his wife. Vayinachem Yehuda vayala gozeitzoy no. He goes to a party, etc., etc. And in verse number 13, Vayugad letamar lemor. Hinei chamicho letimnata. The city of Timna. This is where Tamar is. And she finds out that Yehuda is coming to this city. So she decided that she's not waiting any longer. Now, the law is, let me tell you what the law is. The law in the Torah is that the only one who can possibly do the mitzvah of Yibum is whom? Only the brother, and that's all. This is the law. But the custom which preceded the law, remember, it's the custom precedes the law. The law is given in Sinai, but the custom precedes the law. You see that the custom of Yibum exists. Included all relatives. How do we know it? We even know it from the book of Ruth. Because in the book of Ruth, right, what is the whole idea? That one of her relatives, Boaz, right, has to marry her. But he has a closer relative. But it's not a brother anyway. Well, if you can't get the brother, so get another relative which is permitted to her. But that's even after Matan Torah, which means that there is still a remnant after Matan Torah to the custom of before Matan Torah. It wasn't real Yibum. Real Torah Yibum, levirate marriage, is only a brother. So obviously we are not describing real, pure Torah Yibum. What are we describing then if it's not real Torah Yibum? We are describing something else, not a law but a custom in the book of Ruth. Right? That an uncle of her dead husband, right? And really legally, according to many commentaries, they weren't even married. Right? Ruth, was she married before she married Boaz? Was she Jewishly, legally married? According to most commentaries, she wasn't married because she wasn't Jewish. And the marriage of a Jew and a Gentile woman is not legally called a marriage. So therefore, there is no law of Yibum even because there is no marriage. But still, since they live together as man and wife, there is an idea of Yibum behind it. So the Ramban says right here that you see that the custom of Yibum remained even with relatives who are not brothers. Right. Okay, now, why is this important? Because Tamar, who knows that Shelah, the son, is never going to be given to her, she's not stupid, right? She knows that. She senses that Yehuda doesn't want Shelah to marry her, decides that she's going to go straight to Yehuda, and she's going to get Yehuda to live with her, and to get a child, she's going to get pregnant, hopefully, and that child will be the fulfillment of the craving of the soul of heir. Right? Of the brother, of the dead brother. How does she do it?
In this case, dead son.
And what?
In this case, dead son.
The dead son of Yehuda. Right. Exactly. So, she in verse number 14, Vatasar bigdei almenuta. She takes off her the clothing that usually widows used to wear. Me'alea vatechas Batsaif vatit alaf. She covered herself, right? The same the way Arab women cover themselves with a tzaif, with a veil. Vateisha v'petach einayim, and she set herself in a place that if somebody would see her, he would think for sure she's a prostitute. That's all. Nobody else would be sitting there on the way. Obviously, she's offering herself to the people. And the story is the following, Pasuk 15. Yehuda sees her. He thinks she's a prostitute. Ki chiseta paneha. Now, the simple interpretation is, why didn't he recognize Tamar? Simple interpretation.
She was covered.
Now she was covered. That's what it says. She covered herself. So how can you see that she's Tamar? She can't recognize her. But that's extremely strange. Extremely strange. Why would someone, assuming that, you know, he has sexual desires, he goes for a prostitute. But why should he go for a prostitute that he can't even see the way she looks? Isn't that very strange? Strange. Even more, it's even more strange. What does Tamar think? Why would she think that Yehuda, right, would go for a prostitute. What? Impossible. It's not, I mean, it's impossible that she thought that way. What? Again? So therefore, every person who loses his wife immediately goes for a prostitute. It's very difficult. Right? Very, very difficult to believe what's going on here. So, the plan doesn't make any sense. Tamar's plan doesn't make any sense. Right? And Yehuda's reaction, which follows Tamar's plan, doesn't make any sense at all. And it doesn't make sense why he would go for someone who's covering her face. Right? And he goes to her in verse number 16. And this is even completely absurd. No, we are not talking Osir. We're not talking, it's before Matan Torah. And before Matan Torah, there is no problem with someone. I mean, there is no problem of polygamy, for instance. There is no problem of of having relations, right, with someone that they are not married to. I mean, for Jews, there is such a prohibition of having relations with someone outside of marriage. But here's before Matan Torah. We're not talking about prohibitions. We are talking about behavior, moral behavior. It just doesn't fit for Yehuda to behave in such a way.
But we said also that all the brothers, except for Yosef, said that they were like Jews, and everything they do, they have to do like Jews.
Okay. All right. Okay. So.
Against
not prostitution. Huh? Not prostitution. Prostitution is not prohibited for Bnei Noach. Prostitution.
Adultery
is, but not prostitution for Bnei Noach. Okay? So you say, well, but Yehuda kept the laws.
She's not even, she's a widower.
I mean,
yeah, but she's forbidden to marry anybody else until she gets
chalitza. All right, so listen to the end of this story. Listen to the end of this story. He goes to her, and he offers, he says, okay, you know, let's make a deal. And so she says, all right, I want such and such. Yeah, but, you know, I want izim, what do you call goats. So he says, fine, I don't have it now. What, you know? So, okay, give me a guarantee. So what does Yehuda give her? The chotem, the seal. Now, I want to tell you about the seal. The seal is the most important thing that a person has, right? Which means the seal is something that you seal your letters with. Which means, for instance, if you say in a letter, you know, give me $100,000. If I trust you and it has your seal, I'll give it. Because you are responsible for whatever is sealed with your seal. So why would he trust her with his seal? Right? Doesn't make any sense. And matcha, the pitilecha, he says the garment, the special garment. He was a very special person already at the time, according to one tradition, he was the judge of the place. We're going to see later on where it fits in. He was considered the highest judicial authority in the place. So he gives her the special garment, matcha, the staff, another sign of power, the staff. All that he gives to her. And he has no second thoughts. So that's it. They have relations. Then he sends his friend with what he promised her. His friend can't find her. Looked around, where is the prostitute? There was no prostitute here. And in verse number 22, his friend comes back, says, I didn't find her. So Yehuda says, we can't afford, that we shouldn't pay. A deal is a deal, you know, I have to pay. You know, and I have to get back the guarantees. So after 3 months, something happens. It's verse number 24. Vayugadli Yehuda lemor. The following was told to Judah. Zanta Tamar kalatecha. Your daughter-in-law is pregnant. Vayomer Yehuda hotziyu avet tisareif. I mean, the custom is that someone who doesn't keep this custom of being, of waiting for the brother of the dead person is going against the law, so therefore Tisaref, she deserves the death penalty. No, but this is equal to adultery. It's like she's as if she's married to the one that he's supposed to have relations with her, so it's equivalent to adultery. There are some who say no, it's something else here. It has to do with the fact that Yehuda was such an important person that anybody who did something to embarrass Yehuda would be considered like someone who was going against the powers. So therefore, those powers have the right to give her the death penalties. Like, if you embarrass the king can pass the death penalty, but can give the death penalty. Whatever the situation was, but Yehuda decides that she deserves the death penalty. As she was going out, she didn't say anything. She just brought him. She brought the three things that he gave her. And she says, I am pregnant from this man who gave me this. Now, all Yehuda had to do was to ignore it, right? And that's it, let her die, because it's either she's going to die or he's going to die of shame or, you know, be terribly embarrassed. And he had the courage of admitting. In Pasuk 26, Vayaker Yehuda Vayomer. So, Tzadka Mimeni. Tzadka Mimeni means she is more right than I am. The oral tradition says Tzadka, she is right, Mimeni. The child is from me. Right? Then she has two children. She has twins. And it's interesting that the Torah describes how they were born. In verse number 28. At the time that they were born, all of a sudden a hand appeared. And they tied a ribbon around the hand. In order to remember, that's the hand that came out first. And the moment after that, the hand was withdrawn and a child came out. Not the child who stuck out his hand. Whatever. And they called the name of the child Peretz. The word Peretz in Hebrew means lifrotz, to break through. Lifrotz means to break through. Ufaratzta. To break through, just to go against the tide, to fight against a strong power, to break through, paratz. And this is the name that was given to the oldest child. And then afterwards, the second child came out. Why should the Torah go into the details how he was born and his name was Peretz? But you know what Peretz becomes. The father of Jewish monarchy, right? He's the David HaMelech comes from Peretz. Yeah.
Both are the forefathers.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's very strange.
Now, exactly. Can this be a coincidence?
And that Mashiach is supposed to come.
Exactly. Exactly. Listen to this. That the Yehuda Tomor. How? Through Yibum. Right? In what way? Now, in a way that doesn't sound so nice, that she fooled him into having relations with him. They have a child, Peretz, and he breaks through. And then the chain goes on and we come to Boaz and Ruth. And Ruth comes to Boaz in the middle of the night and says, well, listen, you have to be miyabein me. Right? And they have a child, and that's where David HaMelech comes out.
He dies the next day.
What?
He dies.
According to the oral tradition, that's it. He fulfilled his goal and that's it. He's gone from the world. What is the idea behind it? And besides, as I told you, we have to understand, what is the story of Yehuda? Why is it stuck right in the middle of the story of Yosef? We got the story of Yosef, put in the story of Yehuda, and that's it. Why? What's the idea behind it?
Well, for one thing, Yosef is sort of the king. He has the, as you said the other day, the Torah, you know, was given to him, so to speak. He was given all the traditions from his father, from Yaakov. And he becomes essentially the king in Egypt,
right?
And here's Yehuda, who's going to be like the later king. So there's obviously there's some sort of
so there is. You're right.
There.
You're right. You're right. And at the end, you know that when we're talking about Mashiach, we always talk about the two Mashiachs.
Ben Yosef. And
there is Ben Yosef and there is Ben Yehuda,
right.
And I was Ben David. But here there is something else too. You know, why is it that, as we said before, that David HaMelech comes out of such a questionable situations, right? Unclear, apparently impure situations, right? Yehuda v'Tomor, Boaz and Ruth, right? Even more, David and Bathsheba, right? Right? That's already nothing to do with even, but also it's like an unclear situation as far as the purity of the relationship, and Shlomo HaMelech comes out of Bathsheba. So we find in the Meforshim a very interesting thing. You know that the word Yehuda is related with which, to which word? Hodo'o. Hodo'o, admission. It also means, right, it's admission. Now, the word admission only makes sense if you do something wrong. You hear? Which means the power of Yehuda is to break out of unpleasant situations. True? In other words, other people are destroyed by unpleasant situations, such as another situation can destroy Yehuda. Yehuda can break out of that situation. The Bathsheba situation can destroy Dovid HaMelech. He comes out of it. He comes out of it. That's the capacity to admit. Someone who has to the capacity to admit, it means that he has the strength to overcome the flaw that caused this admission. That's the power of Yehuda, right? He can break out. He can break out. This is the idea of Peretz. He broke out. He can go against the odds and break out. This is the Malchus Beis David. The Gemara says in Brochos that in general, when a person is in big, big trouble and he sees no hope, he doesn't pray. Doesn't pray. But someone who comes from David HaMelech, afilu cherev, even if the sword is against his neck, he will still pray. What's the idea? He never gives up until the last minute. He'll always be fighting. That's the concept of Yehuda. What is the concept of Geulo? Redemption. You can only be redeemed from an unpleasant situation, which means if there is no exile, if everything is perfect, there is no Geulo either. Geulo demands a previous state which is un-Geulo, right? This is the capacity of Mashiach ben David, to bring the Geulo, to break out against all odds. So, what is Yosef's being sold to Egypt represent in Jewish history?